I have nothing to disclose, but I want to acknowledge Dr. Patrick Burnett, who's actually here, for all his mentorship on this project and for making data for this project available. This data comes from Florida, from a number of different sources, and Patrick has gone through the process of cleaning this data up and making it, getting it into a format that we can use it. And I'm also currently supported by a Junior Investigator Award from RWJ through the University of Kentucky. So as many of you may know, in 2012, the IOM published this report for the public's health, investing in a healthier future. And so one of the recommendations in this report was that there should be increases in federal funding to public health agencies so that these agencies have resources to invest in healthier communities and improve population health. So kind of going back to this, right, the underlying hypothesis of this report was that if you have more fiscal and economic resources as a public health agency, you may be able to improve your processes, your internal processes, your performance, so that, eventually on the right side, you're able to improve population health outcomes. And so one of the elements in the process category is cost and efficiency. Right, so the idea is, well, spending more money is a great thing, but we also should spend money in a targeted way, in an efficient way, right, so that we can actually, use these money, or these resources wisely and improve population health outcomes. So what's kind of not clear at this point is how efficient health agencies actually use their resources. So there's only, as far as I can tell, one published study that looked at efficiency, and there's a couple of people working on efficiency estimations. One of them is actually here, Rachel, who is working on this as part of a dissertation. Mike Morris is working on this, but there's not been a lot of published work on what drives efficiency, what drives cost of public health services. So this study really specifically tries to get at this yellow circle. So I'm trying to look at how efficient are health departments at producing services. And also I've started to look into factors that may drive efficiency. And I'm sort of being trained as an economist and an accountant, I'm interested specifically in economies of scale and economies of scope. So, does providing more of a certain service, make a difference in your cost and efficiency? Does providing, a range of similar services make a difference? And so for this project, I just looked at clinical health services, child, adult, and dental health, but any of this is easily applicable to other services, and I'm hoping to continue work in this area. So data, as I mentioned in the beginning, came from Florida, and so Florida has amazing data for public health agencies. They have expenditure, staffing, and sort of a service count number, service count data by a service line. So for each major service line, such as child health, adult health, dental health, certain environmental health services, maternal child health, et cetera, you have data by the service line. And so I used data for Florida and merged that with NATO profile study data and then census data. And so my sample included all 67 Florida county health departments for 2 years. And I'm limited to 2 years mainly because of the NATO profile study only comes out every couple of years. So I've only looked at the ones where I only had actually data for both the health departments and the NATO profile study. So what I did was I used two different ways to get at some kind of measure of efficiency or cost. The first one, the unit cost measure, comes sort of from a management accounting approach where unit costs are defined as the total cost that you incurred divided by, in this case, total visits or total number of services. So, depending on what kind of service you look at, it would be a different measure. But since I'm looking at clinical services, I use the number of visits. And so total cost includes both the direct cost, the direct labor cost, but also indirect overhead allocation costs. The second way that I looked at efficiency was using an econ technique, stochastic frontier analysis, where your relative efficiency, how efficient you are, is defined relative to sort of the most efficient provider, in this case, the most efficient LHD in Florida. And so this is a way to kind of graphically show this. So if you think about, for a given input, the most efficient provider, sort of the further out on the right, the most efficient provider produces a certain amount of output, less efficient providers produce less output given a certain amount of input, right? And so your relative efficiency is measured sort of as a distance between you and who is the most efficient, right? So if you're the most efficient, you're operating what they call like the frontier, right? So you have a value of one. If you are less efficient, you're operating sort of above my frontier in this picture, so you have a value of less than one. So it's sort of a measure between zero and one. And so sort of going back to the cost estimation, right, so I'm looking at unit cost, average cost, which is not marginal cost, just average, total cost divided by total visits. And so this is what I found. If you look at the one, the middle quintile, which is the one in the box, this is sort of the median for each of the three services. So you can see it costs around $140 to $150 per visit to provide child health, adult health, and dental health services in Florida. But what's interesting was that there's a lot of variation. So if you look at the most efficient, sort of quintile one is the most efficient, the most low-cost health departments, their costs were more in the $100 range per visit. If you look at the least efficient, right, you see, you know, costs above $200, above $300 per visit. So you see a quite a bit of a gap here. And also, I was interested, in addition to that, to look at whether one LHD or a number of LHDs would be really efficient at doing everything, right? So would LHDs be concentrated in, let's say, quintile one, all the, you know, they're doing everything efficiently, or are they sort of, you know, spread out? So interestingly enough, no LHD had unit costs that were in the lowest quintile for all three services. So there was no LHD that was really consistently low cost across these three relatively related services. So for many of them, it kind of varied a lot, which may hint at the additional economies of scope, but you know, that's just a descriptive finding. So this is the unit cost. The relative efficiency measure produces, you know, numbers between 0 and 1 for each health department for each service. And so then I looked at, you know, for these three different services I'm looking at, I looked at the average or the median efficiency here as sort of the spread, right? And again, you can see this is for child health. You can see there's a lot of variation, right? Some health departments are, you know, relatively efficient, relatively low cost. Some have, you know, higher cost operating less efficiently. And again, there was a lot of variation. As you can see here, we have similar pictures for adult health and dental health. You know, this is more of a side note. Cost of service provision and efficiency, my two measures were highly correlated, so it may not actually really matter which ones you use in, you know, in your analysis. You can see there's almost like a straight line, right? The more, you know, high cost you are, the lower your efficiency score and vice versa. So for the second question, I'm still in the process of refining this, so this is somewhat preliminary. So this is a multivariate model where I'm trying to regress or, you know, model the cost of providing services on a number of, you know, LHD and community characteristics, as well as my sort of indicators of economies of scale and scope. So for economies of scale, I'm using the number of visits, so the more visits you provide, you know, do I see a cost advantage? And then for economies of scope, I'm looking at the scope of services based on the nature, defined as the number of services that sort of LHDs checked off in the nature profile study. I use a cross-section analysis here using OLS, and I have separate models for each of these services. And because my costs were so skewed, I logged a dependent variable. And here are some of the just a select number of the variables that I'm interested in. So, you know, first of all, maybe the first line, you know, as we can expect, right, the more FTEs I employ in a service line, the higher my cost, so that's not surprising. The second line shows you the number of visits and the relationship to cost. So we can see here the coefficients are negative. They're statistically significant for child and adult health. So the higher the number of visits, the lower my unit cost. And then looking at sort of a number of indicators for scope of service provision, you can see here basically there's almost no statistically significant correlation or relationship between any of my scope indicators and costs, which, you know, may indicate, you know, preliminary findings may speak to the fact that there is some evidence of economies of scale, but not all that much evidence of economies of scope. So it may actually help you to lower cost if you're able to provide more visits and spread your fixed costs, which kind of makes intuitive sense. But I didn't find much in the realm of economies of scope, so producing even related services didn't seem to help you much in terms of improving your efficiency, at least for these services and for Florida. So, you know, this goes back to something that JP mentioned. You know, we are in a time of budget cuts and funding shortfalls, right? There's not much discretion, or often not as much discretion as people wished there was, right? So for practitioners, it's really important to, first of all, have tools to really, you know, be able to calculate cost, or, you know, estimate the efficiency at which they're producing services. And so I'm working on another project together with Patrick, and also Betty is involved in these projects. We're just trying to come up with, you know, cost estimates for certain public health services. Florida is sort of a step ahead because they already have that data, and we can, you know, run more sophisticated analysis. But often it's just like, first of all, trying to find ways to, you know, quantify what is the cost, you know, me as a health department to provide services. So these techniques are some of the techniques that, you know, folks can use to, you know, get at that. And I think it goes back to JP's presentation in terms of like having some sort of decision tool or support tool, right, that will help me as I'm, you know, faced with, you know, budget cuts or, you know, with stagnant funding, where am I supposed to spend my money, right? So some of these measures may be able to, you know, help us get there. And so then the last point in terms of economies of scale that we're seeing here, right, I mean, there are some, you know, there's some movement toward consolidating LHDs or partnering with other providers in a community. And so economies of scale may certainly, you know, point to that, right, if you can, you know, if you can provide more services to that and reduce your costs, maybe it makes sense to outsource that or partner with someone or someone else in the community could do that. So these are just sort of initial findings that, you know, people may be able to use in the future as they plan for, you know, how can we provide a comprehensive set of public health services at a, you know, reasonable or low cost. And so limitations, you know, I only looked at Florida here. I only had these 2 years, and I was talking to someone at the Florida Department of Health, and there were other, you know, factors he mentioned that, you know, may influence some of the findings, especially with the clinical health services. I don't have a case mix measure here, which is a big problem, right? I don't know whether all the patients serve for, you know, similar, or, you know, some health departments may serve, you know, healthier folks, some may serve, you know, more elderly. So we don't know that. Quality of services is not accounted for here, and that's another big issue. It's not just about being efficient and being, you know, low cost, but providing good quality care. And then there are some accounting issues where sometimes grants that are used for, you know, like a public health education campaign is attributed to that service line, like clinical health services, for reasons I'm not sure exactly why, but that's supposedly the case. So sometimes these measures may be off just because of, you know, we having big expenditure blocks that will merge sort of into clinical service lines. So some of these hopefully we'll be able to address in the future in multivariate studies. I did try to address the last point by including revenue percentages and payer mix, so to speak, but, and there was nothing that you know, that showed up as significant, but certainly quality of service provided and the case mix will be things we'll have to look at more in the future. So happy to you know, try to answer any questions you may have. Thank you. True. Yeah, and there is a way that's true. Yeah, we can't get at gaming the system in this one, but there are ways we can probably in the future work around some of this, because we have, in addition to visits, we have service counts as well, which is, you know, a different measure. So the number of services provided, we have the number of patients served in addition to that. So we can, so this data is great in that it allows us to look at actually sort of a number of efficiency measures. I haven't done that, but it's a really good point, so I should, you know, look at all of these measures and see whether there's something like this going on. But Betty and Patrick may be able to add, maybe not, maybe they may be able or maybe not able to add to that more. So, but yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, these were clinics that are part of the local health department, so public health clinics.
Visits equal revenue, so especially with dentistry, for instance, they do
that as possible. Especially with dentistry, I noticed looking at the time trends that clinics became much more efficient, which in terms of like providing a lot more visits per, you know, per population, per 1,000 population than, you know, in earlier times, which may have to do with, you know, people not having other coverage or using this more, or provider, you know, incentives to get people back. So there is definitely in for dental visits, there's an interesting trend in Florida that there's a lot more visits per population. I didn't use that measure in this analysis, but it's definitely an interesting thing over time to look at.
Probably more kids.
Yeah, and dentistry is not split up into adults and children, so I only have that for the other health, so we don't really quite know what's driving it. So for kids, interestingly enough, there's not a lot of action. Like, it's actually pretty stable, but for adult visits and for dental visits over time, they increase a lot. So that's another thing that kind of plays into this. Yeah, the urban rural, I didn't show this, but there was no difference. I mean, controlling for these other things, the urban rural, you know, distinction did not show up as significant. So, yeah. Yeah, Patrick may be much more qualified to talk about this. I think to some extent the question here is, right, how much with the ACA, how much are local health departments still going to be doing in terms of clinical care versus how much is going to be done by, you know, the healthcare system, right, once people have insurance. So it's going to be a good question. I think some of these clinics are trying to sort of figure out how to position themselves right now, right? Are they going to really say, well, people are going to have insurance and so they can find care somewhere else, or is this actually, you know, something that's, you know, profitable and meaningful for us to do, and Patrick is probably going to...
Go back to my old job when I was a physician practice consultant. If a health district looks at this as a source of revenue and profit, then this tool becomes incredibly powerful when applied to clinical services, because the cheaper I can perform these services, the more profit I'm going to make, the more I can use that money to fund other services.
Yeah, and part of my reason for looking at these services was, where it's a big thing that, I mean, it's a big budget item for Florida health departments right now, and it's sometimes used to cross-subsidize, right? So sometimes the revenues you can generate in these areas you can use for other things. So I think, you know, more generally speaking, having an idea of what it costs you, is this a profitable thing or not, will actually help you a lot in terms of, you want to hold on to this, or are you kind of glad that, you know, someone else can take care of it.
One question along those same lines, and one comment. This is great work. It would be interesting to compare the results science found in local public health operating clinics to the similar results you might see in community health centers, which are also serving the same population. And as you know, that part of the debate, you know, should health departments stay in the clinical services game? But one piece of information to inform that is, you know, are health departments more or less efficient in doing this compared to other clinical providers?
Yeah, no, thank you. No, that's a great suggestion. I'm just sort of getting my feet wet in this area right now because I come more from the hospital side. But yeah, it's a great suggestion. I think it'll be really, really meaningful to look at that and see, you know, who can do things at sort of the lowest cost at a, you know, reasonable quality, so we can use, you know, scarce resources in the best way.
Did you look at the data against any other demographics, not just poor, but more undocumented or...
Yeah, I control for a number of sort of standard, you know, factors. Yeah. So for this presentation, I focus mostly on, you know, the economic scale and scope thing. But yeah, I did control for other things, and I'll likely, you know, go back and try to, you know, include more of these you know, controls into that as well. It's part of it is sample size here. Like, I only have I'm only using 2 years right now. I only have like 120, you know, LHDs like observations total. So there's a limit to, you know, how many variables I can include and still have a meaningful sample size and meaningful power.
And One other thing, I'm just, you know, not very familiar with the structure in Florida. So do these county health departments pretty much have the same mission coming down from the state? Are they similar?
Okay, I may have to defer this to Patrick.
Living in Florida. The answer is more or less yes. It's a pretty strong state system, so every county is expected to provide a fairly standard shopping cart full of services. There's some variation, but a lot less variation than we see in other states.
All right. Thank you. Oh, one more? Okay. So I didn't see you.
Just for clarification, are these services provided for one payer mix? Are these individuals publicly insured? Or was there a variation in the payer mix in each county?
There is some reimbursement for Medicaid for some of the services. I don't think I have a payer mix measure. Do you know, Patrick, in terms of?
We do not.
I don't think I know.
We do know Medicaid revenue.
Yeah.
So Medicaid as a portion of both.
I mean, yeah, what I do have and I control for that is revenue by source for the whole health department. So like, you know, proportion of local, state, federal, you know, health insurance type revenue. But I don't have that broken down by service line. So I can't control for, you know, dental health or the dental Medicaid revenue, for instance. So that's not, that's a limitation of the data. Yeah. That's a good point, but yeah, we don't have that.